You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up on Wisconsin Life, we'll talk about community bands here in the state and the role they play in their communities.
First, in 2012, a group of Roman Catholic nuns made a 2,700-mile road trip through nine states and called the tour Nuns on the Bus. The trip was meant to highlight social justice issues and also protest a federal budget that was proposed by Wisconsin Congressman Paul Ryan. Ryan cited his Catholic faith when he proposed the budget cuts, but the nuns on the bus opposed it and argued that it would help the rich at the expense of the poor.
Now the group of Catholic sisters are kicking off their fifth tour today in Madison. They're calling it Mend the Gaps, Reweave the Fabric of Society. They're hitting the road again during a polarizing election to help, quote, close the vast and growing economic divides, end quote, here in the country.
Joining us in the studio now is Sister Simone Campbell. She's a religious leader, an attorney, and a poet. She's also executive director of Network Lobby for Catholic Social Justice and the leader of Network's Nuns on the Bus. Sister Simone, welcome to Central Time.
Oh, so glad to be with you.
Well, this year, you want policymakers to mend the gap. That's your phrase, mend the gap. Can you tell us more about what kinds of gaps you're thinking of here?
Well, first of all, we started with our income and wealth disparity. We know that in our nation, the top 1, 2% are getting more and more wealthy and having higher and higher incomes, while the most of us are struggling and having a hard time. That's where we started. But we realize it's just not an economic gap. It's also an access gap. So we have, and the good news about this, there is good news. I mean, we can all be miserable and think this is awful, and it is awful. But the good news is policies created this mess. So we have the chance to change it by changing policies. So our bus trip is a journey to explain and invite people to participate in a commitment to mend these gaps by changing our policy.
Well, you're doing this bus trip in the midst of an especially contentious, especially
yes,
polarized year. Do you see anything different about maybe your mission on the bus this year? And also just what you're seeing, because you've done this before. What do you expect to be different?
Well, I think one of the things that's different is the anguish of last week with the killings that everybody in our nation was affected by in one way or another. And that anguish means that we need some way to come together as a society. And the bus is one way to help create healing. But the second piece is, everywhere we go, people are not happy with this polarized, divided, extreme rancor. And so I think what we're able to do is to say we're better than this. We, the people, can make a difference, and we create communities with a commitment to making change.
So how does it work? I mean, you're starting in Madison. Your first stop is Janesville, and we'll get to the why of that in just a moment. But when you're on this trip, how do you engage with people? How do you meet them? Because I know you really want to interact with people. You want to hear their stories, and that's why you're
exactly
there.
Exactly. That's why we're here. We come as learners, which is really different, because most trips on big buses, you know, like campaigns or those kinds of things, the politicians show up and they've got their talking points. With us, no, we come. We want to hear the stories. So we do three different kinds of visits. We do, tonight we're actually doing a fourth kind, which is a blessing. We're going to have the blessing of the bus. And if you commit to mending the gap and you sign our pledge card, then you get to sign the bus. Because by the end of the trip, we want a community, not just nuns on the bus, but it's everybody on the bus. That's one. The second thing that we do is called a caucus, where we hear about the divides in an area, and then we bring our seven policies that we lift up and say, well, how would that impact the area that we're in, like Madison? How would that impact Madison? And then the third thing we do is site visits, where we go to a place of service in various communities where we learn some of the challenges and then how people are responding to meet those needs. So those three things put us in contact with real people.
What's an example of a place of service?
Oh, Gloria, let me pick one. Let me talk about the really great dental clinic that we went to in outside of Milwaukee. It was total volunteers, dentists from around the Milwaukee area. This was a couple of years ago, who had state-of-the-art dentistry for people who didn't have access to dental care. Dental care is not covered in the Affordable Care Act and is one of the big, it can be a real contributing factor, especially for kids, for childhood childhood illnesses. And so here they had an all-volunteer staff who ran this amazing clinic, serving hundreds of people during the day, but learning the stories of the people there. And then the service of folks made the difference for us. So I remembered them. And actually, I went back to my own dentist and I said, you should see what they've got in Milwaukee. I hope you can upgrade your tech services here. But it's that kind of experience.
Now, as I said, you're starting in Madison, and then your first stop after that is Janesville. So why are you starting here in Wisconsin and Madison, and then why Janesville for the first stop?
Well, Madison is a great place to come, and we have connections with the sisters up at Holy Wisdom Monastery, and it's just a great hopping-off point. But Janesville is so interesting. We did invite Speaker Ryan as well as Congressman Mark Pocan to come. Now, the interesting thing is Janesville, that area, that county, is represented by Speaker Ryan, a conservative, Congressman Mark Pocan, a member of the Democratic Progressive Caucus. And we thought that any area that could be represented by two such different folks created the possibility for dialogue and engagement. There's the perfect place to learn how to mend the gaps, because certainly their political perspectives are dramatically different, but it's one people in one county. So we're there to learn, how do you do it? How do we get together? Help us understand.
We're talking with Sister Simone Campbell right now, religious leader, attorney, and poet. She's the executive director of Network Lobby for Catholic Social Justice and the leader of Network's Nuns on the Bus. It's starting in Madison, and first stop is going to be Janesville. And you've called yourself Pope Francis voters. Not Democrats, not Republicans,
that's right.
Not a third party. Pope Francis voters. What does that mean?
Well, some of your listeners may remember that Pope Francis came in September and challenged Congress. I got to be in the chambers when he addressed Congress. It was such an honor. But he said that our role is to be a bridge for those who have different perspectives, to work for justice that includes the common good, where everyone benefits, not just special interests, that the Catholic message is for the 100%. And so we know that his concern around poverty, exploitation of our people, the exploitation of our earth, this has touched the hearts of many Catholics and non-Catholics in our nation. So we think this election cycle, that's going to be the measure of what is a Catholic voter, what's a faithful voter. And so we started calling them Pope Francis voters. It was my poetic mind just playing with the words. But I think it's really true, because he has a heart for everyone.
And it's interesting this year, I mean, with Pope Francis, he's actively asked Catholics to meddle in politics, to
yes.
get involved. Do you see that as being an interpretation of faith?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because in our society, in a democracy, the way we make our values seen is by stepping into that political world. And he acknowledges it can be messy and dirty and not your more noble occupation. I mean, I'll be quite candid. It's much easier to do direct service and do charity. Doing this political work is hard, because I have to listen to people who disagree with me. I have to figure a way out that includes them as well as my perspective, and together we can move forward. For me, only faith becomes the anchor point strong enough to sustain us in solving our problems. And that's why it's important for us to act out our faith in this really complex world.
I know it must be hard. You write about hearing stories that will break your heart. You talked about the anguish of last week and the shootings in the country. And you're wanting to mend the gaps again, as you call it, through politics. So as we wrap up, what are there specific policies that you would like to see?
Oh, absolutely. One is living wages. I met Robin, who works full time for minimum wage, and she has to live in a homeless shelter in the D.C. area because she can't afford rent. And I know rents here in the Madison area are really high, too. Minimum wage is insufficient. A living wage would make a difference. A just tax structure where everybody pays their fair share. Too often we're giving tax cuts to those at the top. But you know what? It's adversely impacting those at the bottom. We all have to contribute for the common good. And then some other things about the census. We have to fund the census so everybody gets counted and everybody can vote. We have to reinstitute the Voting Rights Act. Simple thing, really simple things, but it would make a difference for our nation. Those are the kinds of things we're for.
Sister Simone, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, what an honor. Glad to be with you.
That was Sister Simone Campbell. She's a religious leader, a poet, and an attorney, and executive director of Network Lobby for Catholic Social Justice. And she leads the Nuns on the Bus Tour, which is in Madison, Wisconsin, now about to get underway. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a new contest is looking for nominations for the coolest product produced in Wisconsin. We'll ask for some of your suggestions.
But first, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's executive producer Erica Janik.
Ladies Must Swing is an all-female jazz band based out of Madison. It's a big group, 19 members, playing big band and swing in period costume. Founder June Dalton tells us about the group.
I can always remember back to learning to play some piano and some people commenting about, oh, she plays by ear. And I thought, well, what is that? How exciting is that? And then after, you know, that, then you get to start playing an instrument. And it was suggested because I was a girl that I should play flute. Okay. Well, then they said my arms weren't long enough to play flute. So then they said, well, how about clarinet? Okay, so clarinet. So then I did clarinet forevermore. I kept playing, and I'm so glad I did, because it's opened the door to so many wonderful opportunities. And then finally, when I got to the ripe old age of maybe 34, 35, I started playing the saxophone. Ladies Must Swing. Yes, and swing we do. I was so fortunate to be asked by a lovely lady who is the head of the Madison Jazz Society, and she invited me to put together a group of all-lady musicians for an event they were doing. And so I did, and that goes back quite a few years now, like 20, and we put it together and we did it. And it was based on the fact that people loaned us music and we really didn't have any of the accoutrements that you need to put on a concert on our own. So kind of had to let it go for a couple years. Then a few years later, I thought, along with my drummer friend, Marianne, that we could put together a fall big band of like 17 ladies and create a place for women to play jazz music. Well, if you look back at all the footage and the films and the players from years gone by, they were mostly men. And through our wonderful experiences, we've been able to uncover lots of music that was composed or played by women musicians. And now more than ever, there is a big emphasis on that. So I've learned so much about history of these wonderful women, such as Mary Lou Williams and Lil Hardin Armstrong, and we're finding how delightful it is to be able to play their music. When we first started, we were having trouble finding especially trumpet and trombone players. And something wonderful has happened over the last 20 years, that now there are many more ladies available playing those instruments. And I think it's due to the fact that whole area has opened up and girls are now not told to play a certain instrument. They are probably given choices on what they want to play. And perhaps trumpet and trombone are much more appealing these days because anybody can do it now.
Just for a thrill.
That was June Dalton, the founder and a member of Ladies Must Swing. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life on our website, wisconsinlife.org, and on Facebook. I'm Erica Janik.
From a swing band, now we turn to a local group of volunteer musicians that's been together for over 30 years. They've toured Europe playing everything from Sousa marches to, being from Wisconsin, of course, polkas.
Joining us now are Jan Tweed and Toby Shuka, the director and associate director of the Wanakee Community Band. Jan and Toby, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Well, Jan, can we start off by getting just a brief history? How long has the Wanakee Community Band been around, and how did it get started?
Well, the Wanakee Community Band started in 1985. And the reason that I started it, I was still at that time teaching in the Wanakee schools, and of course got to know a lot of the parents and adults, and everybody kept asking me, why don't we have a community band? Couldn't you start a community band? Wouldn't it be nice if we could have a community band? So I thought, well, yeah, I can do that. You know, for a couple of years, that'd be kind of fun. So I put the word out, and our first group of musicians, we had 30 people in our first band, and a good one-half to two-thirds of them were high school students. And then it would adults, because they heard about it. And we gave maybe one or two concerts a year, and then it began to grow. And here it is, year 31, and we're still together, and we have between 80 and 90 members in the band.
Wow.
And we have quite a schedule as far as our performance schedule. We're basically a summer band. We start rehearsals in April, and then our concert season is basically June and July. We end the first part of August so our people can go on vacation. And then we have several times during the year that we perform for community events. And then every other year we try to give a looking for spring concert in mid-weather.
And Toby, let's get you in on this. You're the associate director of the Wanakee Community Band. Do you have to be a pretty decent musician to be in this band, or can you be someone who used to play and wants to get back into it and is looking to get their feet wet again?
Well, you know, we do have some audition criteria. We tell all of our prospective members that they have to play one note right their first time there. So it's pretty strict. No, we actually welcome anybody who has the basic instrument playing skills. And it's not that we even want to keep anybody out, just rather they wouldn't have fun if they couldn't play most of the notes with us. But we pretty much let everybody who wants to be there in, and we've set a lower limit at pretty much finishing eighth grade is where we start looking at. But we've had members all the way up, at least easily into 80s. I can't remember if we've had any nonagenarians yet or not, but we've come pretty close.
That's so cool that you have all these mixed ages together. I mean, you don't often see many venues in life these days where you've got people from eighth grade to their 80s. What is it like having that mix of people in this one musical group, Jan?
Toby and I both got something for that. I'll just say it gives a band a richness that you cannot believe. Because you might be an eighth grader or a college student, and you're sitting next to somebody who's played for 50 years. And so we don't turn anybody away, and we just want everybody to enjoy what they're doing. So, Toby, go ahead.
I was just going to say that there were a few concerts where I had three generations of my family, my mom, myself, and my son, all performing with the band. And so that's a pretty neat thing for me, but also for the people in the audience and the people in the group to be able to have that experience of working together with people of other generations. Because as you said, that's not something that commonly happens in our society, and that gives us a lot more insight into each other's lives and get to know each other.
Yeah, very cool to have three generations within one band. That's got to be
right
an experience.
Now, right now, I have my husband, my son, or our son, and our granddaughter in the band.
Oh, so this is something that gets around as a family experience in this band.
Yeah, it really is. And we've had times, last year, for example, we had a father and all three of his children.
Mm-hmm.
And this year we have just two of them because the third one has been overseas.
I see.
So we really welcome, you know, all ages, and the kids are what give it that you know, that richness, you know, with all of their energy.
And I know that we're talking about you as a community band, but I hear that you have also, in the past, toured all over Europe playing for audiences abroad. I mean, just briefly, what were those experiences like?
Well, that was one thing that Toby didn't get to do because he was still in college and you know, not able to. But our first trip was to Germany and Austria. Our second trip was to Ireland and Scotland. And our third trip was to Norway. And we found no matter where we were welcomed. We were enjoyed. We even played a combined concert with a city band in Dietesfeld, Germany. And we've made some wonderful friends, friends that we still have and still, you know, correspond with. And we found that no matter where we went, we were welcomed, and we had good audiences, and plus seeing those beautiful countries. And Toby was in charge of one here in the States, Toby?
Yeah, we just took the Rocky Mountain Tour a couple of years ago out to the resorts around Denver. And it's not quite the cultural experience of going overseas, but it's the same kind of situation. Everybody's always happy to see us. Everybody's always welcome to stop by and listen. And I think the members had quite a lot of fun, too.
And I know that you've got an event coming up. Toby, you want to tell us about what we can look forward to?
Sure. We have five community bands that are playing in the Village Park in Wanakee. And if you come in, it's right off Highway 19. And they're playing about half an hour apiece. And after everybody finishes their part of the festival, we'll have a masked band playing under the direction of two directors. One is Scott Teeple, the director of Wind Ensemble at UW-Madison, and the other is Sam Robinson, who just retired after, 30-some years at Wanakee High School.
And what is the date on that?
And that is the 17th of July, so we're coming right up on it. It's this Sunday, and it starts at 1 o'clock, and we should be all wrapped up before 5 o'clock.
Excellent. Well, thank you.
Vendors and activities for kids and all sorts of things happening there.
It sounds like fun. Thank you both so much for joining me.
Well, thank you. Well,
thank you for having us.
That was Jan Tweed, director and founder of the Wanakee Community Band, joined by Toby Shuka, associate director of the Wanakee Community Band.
Coming up, learn about a new contest to find the coolest thing made in Wisconsin. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up after 7, it's this week's edition of Reveal. Tonight, Reveal shares the results of an investigation into allegations of corruption in the U.S. Border Patrol. That's tonight after 7 on the Ideas Network.
First, what do you think is the coolest thing made in Wisconsin? What would you vote for as our state's most awesome homemade product? Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce just announced a new contest to find out just that. It's called the Coolest Thing Made in Wisconsin Contest.
Kurt Bauer is with us now to talk about the contest. He's the president and CEO of Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. Kurt, welcome back to Central Time.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, Kurt, where did you get the idea for this contest for the coolest thing made in Wisconsin?
Well, we have, since 2012, designated October as Manufacturing Month as a way to promote the manufacturing sector. We do such a great job of promoting and celebrating our agricultural heritage here in Wisconsin, but most people don't realize that 20% of the Wisconsin economy is actually manufacturing. And in just having a staff meeting here at WMC, and we've got some young, hip millennials that work here, coming up with ideas on how we can draw more attention to manufacturing, just educating people that things are made in Wisconsin, things are still made in the United States. We're the world's largest manufacturer still. And we came up with a contest. Let's actually have people submit suggestions on what things are made in Wisconsin and which one of them is the coolest thing made in Wisconsin.
Yeah, are a lot of things living in the shadow of the cow here in the state? The rest of the country doesn't recognize what's coming out of Wisconsin because they think, dairy products and Packers?
Well, you're absolutely right, and that's a broader problem for us as we market our state and we try to get people to move here, because we have a demographic issue that we've talked about other times and I've been on your show, and that does play into this. But, you know, if you grab somebody on State Street here in Madison or somebody in Milwaukee or in Green Bay or Western Wisconsin and ask them what is the number one business sector in the state, they'd probably say agriculture. You know, we put it on the license plate, we put it on our state quarter, we talk about it a lot, we're America's Dairyland. But the reality is that the number one driver of this state's economy is manufacturing. It's the super sector, because one factory job creates at least 2.5 to 3 jobs in other sectors of the economy. You make it, you mine it, you grow it. That's the way you build wealth in any economy. And we're fortunate that manufacturing is so strong in Wisconsin. It is the foundation of the middle class.
Has it changed over the years, the kinds of things that get manufactured now versus what Wisconsin might have been known for maybe 20 years ago?
Oh, absolutely, in a big way. We used to do simple manufacturing in Wisconsin, like most of the United States. Most of those jobs have now gone overseas for cheaper labor. Now we're looking at advanced manufacturing, and the products that we make, I think, are just that much cooler as a result. We make more mining equipment that goes around the world in Milwaukee than in any place else in the world. We make the fastest single-hulled sailboat in the world. We make littoral combat vessels up in Marinette. We make components for the military. We make components for recreation. We make bicycles. We make motorcycles. We make engines. So now we're talking about advanced manufacturing. It's not the simple assembly that many people associate with manufacturing. It's not dumb, dirty, and dangerous. It's actually very complex and very exciting.
You know, if you ask somebody something that's manufactured in Wisconsin, I'm guessing they're going to reach for the brand, the Harley-Davidson motorcycles. But are there a lot of, you know, under-the-radar products, maybe less sexy things that are under the hood of things we encounter in our daily lives?
Well, you know, so I'm the head of the Manufacturers Association in the state, so you think I'd have a pretty good handle on all the things that are made here. But in just the week that we've had this contest going, I found out that we make brass diving helmets in Milwaukee. We make neutron accelerators here in Monona from Phoenix Nuclear Labs. We make water activated tape. We make infant simulators that are used for training nurses and for testing as crash test dummies. And we make an incredibly diverse list of products. And, of course, then don't forget, you know, all the food products we make, the beer, the wine, the cheese. I just found out today that we make malted milk balls, and Ortega taco sauce is made in Stoughton, Wisconsin.
Wow, so you're getting an education. Imagine what the rest of us have to learn about this. Is the contest open for submissions already, then?
Yes, it is. People can go to madeinwith.com, and you don't have to work for the company. All you have to do is submit the product and the company that makes it. What we will do is we'll take nominations through the end of the summer, basically starting Labor Day. Then we will begin the voting process. And we really want this to be Wisconsinites choosing the coolest thing made in Wisconsin. And we're really pushing young people in particular. We're trying to make this social media intensive, because we want young people to know what's made in Wisconsin, how it's made in Wisconsin, and then be exposed to the career options that they may be interested in pursuing later on.
We're talking to Kurt Bauer from Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce about the contest going on now, the coolest thing made in Wisconsin. You can enter your submissions now. And Kurt, give us a working definition of coolness when it comes to manufactured products. What are you looking for here?
It's the eye of the beholder. We've had some things submitted that I didn't think were all that cool, but, you know, we all have our biases. You know, it's amazing. We have three fire truck apparatus manufacturers in Wisconsin. I think that's pretty good, pretty cool. Seagrave up in Clintonville is the single manufacturer of fire trucks that go to the Fire Department of New York. I mean, that's really interesting stuff, and we're trying to start the conversation. We're trying to educate, and hopefully we're trying to get people inspired to maybe pursue careers in manufacturing, because we have a demographic issue throughout the state, and that means all sectors have trouble finding workers, but it's particularly pronounced in manufacturing, and because manufacturing is our largest business sector, it reverberates throughout the economy.
Kurt, you piqued my curiosity, so it's working. What do we use brass helmets for?
Diving.
Diving.
Deep sea diving. I mean, if you conjure back to, you know, images of somebody in a big diving bell helmet, Well, they still do something very similar to that, and they manufacture them here in, and I believe it's in Merrill, Wisconsin.
And we could take them for a spin in the Great Lakes, then.
Excuse me, they're made in Milwaukee. They're made by Desco.
Oh, okay. So we could just hop right in Lake Michigan and put that to the test.
Exactly, yeah. Part of that whole, that water cluster.
So interesting that they're made out of brass. So I guess there's a lot to be learned about what's coming out of Wisconsin right now.
Well, there are. And it's very complex stuff. There's a lot of innovation involved. I like to say that manufacturing and innovation are the yin and yang. You can't have one without the other. And people, again, associate manufacturing as being rather dumbed down, and there's nothing could be further from the truth. When I tour a factory, it is a combination of the information age and the industrial age, and you're looking at some pretty exciting things.
And Kurt, you mentioned you're hoping the contest would inspire people to go into careers in manufacturing. We've talked to you about that before. Are you also hoping that maybe it inspires potential entrepreneurs of the future to explore manufacturing here in the state?
Well, that's a great byproduct, to be sure. We do have manufacturing startups. We had one just last year in the Sheboygan area. Doesn't get as much press as, say, tech startups or software startups, but it does happen, and you're absolutely right. I mean, why not come here? I mean, the reason why Milwaukee is considered the machine tool capital of the world is because of that cluster phenomenon where you've got all of this intellectual talent. You've got the natural resource being the people with the know-how. Wisconsin has the know-how to make things, and not just, food products. We're talking about, high-tech products, electronics, medical equipment, and a lot of engines. Wisconsin leads the nation in engine manufacturing, from Briggs & Stratton to Generac to Kohler, and a lot of electrical engines as well as combustion.
So how do you pick a winner when everything is said and done and all the votes are in?
Well, we're not going to. Voters are going to pick that. And so it's going to be very democratic, although people will have to come onto the website and they'll actually have to vote. And what we're hoping for is that the manufacturers try to gin up the votes for their products on social media, because we're really targeting young people for this.
Is there a prize or just the name recognition that comes with winning the award?
Well, there will be a prize that we'll recognize the winner at our State of Wisconsin Business Luncheon on October 18th. Again, October being Manufacturing Month, so we think it's an appropriate time to do that. And we'll have the chief economist for the National Association of Manufacturers there. So we'll have a manufacturing focus at that event. And we'll have a video announcing the winner, and then, of course, we'll have some sort of recognition plaque. We haven't figured that out. We talked about an ice sculpture because, of course, it's the coolest thing made in Wisconsin, but you can't really take that home and display that in your lobby.
Not for long.
Well, Kurt, thanks a lot for joining us.
My pleasure.
That was Kurt Bauer, president and CEO of Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. He joined us there to talk about the coolest thing made in Wisconsin contest.
And now it's your turn. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think is the coolest thing made, manufactured here in Wisconsin? What would you nominate in this contest of what Wisconsin product would get your vote? And what's the coolest thing made in your community, in your part of the state? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post your nominations on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll be back with this conversation in just a bit here on Central Time.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. And we're asking for your nominations now for the coolest thing that you think is made in Wisconsin. Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your favorite thing made in the state.
We just spoke to Kurt Bauer, president and CEO of Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. They have a new contest out called The Coolest Thing Made in Wisconsin, and we're taking your nominations. Join in at 800-642-1234. Your number one Wisconsin product, manufactured product, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Again, the number 800-642-1234.
And we go to our callers now. We've got Dale with us first in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Dale.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What do you vote for?
Well, I before I tell you my vote, I just want to mention briefly, this is really a cool subject for me. I owned a small printing business up until recently in Chippewa Falls here. And one of the things I've always told people about the printing business, almost all companies do some sort of printing. And So I've gotten to know over the years, you just can't believe it, even in our area here, Chippewa Falls, Eau Claire, the number of manufacturing businesses that, just as your guest was saying, people don't realize. And I could go on and on about them. But the coolest one is, and actually have been a little bit of a customer over the years, but not much, but in Chippewa Falls, and I don't think many people realize this other than people in our community, but we have long been home to the world's fastest supercomputers. Cray Inc. Was started by a native in Chippewa Falls here, and the company exists today in Chippewa Falls and has a couple other areas, but they manufacture in Chippewa Falls, and they're literally right now, and they've been on and off over the years, as I remember, but they are the world's fastest, and they're sold all over the world to generally governments, huge corporations. The Weather Service buys them for these just super complex calculations.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for telling us about that, Dale. It's an eye-opener for me. World's fastest computers in Wisconsin.
In Chippewa Falls. I've heard of Cray. I did not know the Wisconsin connection, and I probably should have. Thanks, Dale. We'll go next to Joe on the line in Washburn. Joe, hi.
Yes, without a doubt. I stand up for Harley-Davidson as being the number one coolest product produced in Wisconsin since 1903, not only because of what the whole world knows about this company, but also simply because they pay a good living wage to their employees, and it's just a great company. And the customers who buy those motorcycles strongly support that company and that living wage.
Joe, thanks a lot for your call. Your nomination of the coolest product in Wisconsin. There is a contest going on now, and we're informally taking your nominations here at 800-642-1234.
Joe, thanks a lot for that. Let's go next to Josh in Loretta. Hi, Josh.
Hello.
What is your vote?
Well, there's a company in Iron River, Wisconsin called Hood Manufacturing, and they manufacture all kinds of complex loaders. They're hydraulically operated. They have both loaders for trucks that run off the engine power of the truck and slasher-type loaders that have their own power and are able to move under their own power.
Wow, fantastic. So this is Hood Manufacturing near Iron River, you said?
Yes.
Perfect. Well, thanks for that. It's a good vote there. Another one. I think we're going to learn a lot by the time this is all said and done.
Yeah, we learned a lot from our colleagues here. Carl Christensen said Dwarfcraft guitar pedals, world-class effects pedals, he says, made in Eau Claire. Maureen McCollum, you hear her on the Morning News, Morning Edition. She says her great-grandfather helped invent the Corky. The Corky, that's a rubber flapper, evidently, in many toilets. She says she's biased because of the family ties, but still made in Burlington, Wisconsin. So
Right. Our
toilets don't work without Wisconsin-made products, and that's important. Our computers, our weather service, and our rockin' guitars.
And we've got Dora Suniga, Director of Development for WPR. She's going to the food side of things. Mm-hmm. She says El Rey Tortillas from Milwaukee, the largest minority-owned business in Wisconsin.
I've eaten one or two of their tortillas.
Yeah, me too.
Back to our callers now with Lynn in Montello. Lynn, hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me on the air. I just wanted to mention I work for a steel company, TW Design and Manufacturing in Montello, and we make various military parts for military vehicles for Oshkosh trucks. We make parts for Waukesha engine. We make various parts for all over the U.S., but also local.
And Lynn, let me ask, Kurt Bauer, our guest earlier, was saying, you know, manufacturing today, it's not what we picture of the factories of old. It's high-tech stuff. Is that what your work site is like, really high-tech manufacturing?
They're basically, yeah, we have a lot of machines, CNC machines, that, you know, do a lot of the work, cutting and such of steel. We do other types of materials, but we're mainly steel that we do truck parts, like I said, engine parts. We also do for sporting equipment and agricultural, too.
Interesting. Lynn, thank you so much for sharing that at 800-642-1234, taking your nominations for the coolest products manufactured, made here in Wisconsin.
And here's one that surprised me a bit. Maybe you knew about this one already, Rob, but Carmex lip balm.
I didn't know this.
Made in Franklin, Wisconsin. And these things, at least in Wisconsin, Carmex is pretty ubiquitous. People always have a little tin around drugstores and that. And,
yeah.
And here it is, made in Wisconsin.
Local product. Yeah, Dave Potraz let us know about that. Back to our callers now. JT on the line in Menominee. JT, hi.
Hello there. I've got a cool product that's hot. All with Swiss Miss.
Swiss Miss.
Swiss Miss cocoa and pudding is made in Menominee.
Okay, I didn't know that. So do you are you involved working there, or do you just consume a lot of it because it is a local food for you?
Well, I just consume a lot of it, and at certain times during the day, certain times during the year, we have an air emission situation here, and the smell of cocoa and pudding wafts over the downtown area of Menominee. So you step outside and you can smell the cocoa. Hmm.
JT, you can do a lot worse than that.
Oh, sounds kind of good. Yeah. Thanks a lot, JT, for bringing that one to our attention. We're going to go next to Rusty in Baraboo. Hi, Rusty.
Hi. Well, I was just thinking one of the coolest high-tech things that made in Wisconsin was the Talgo high-speed trains.
Talgo high-speed trains. Okay, can you tell me more about that?
Well, when Governor Doyle made the deal for the high-speed rail expansion, he got the Talgo company from Spain to build a plant in Milwaukee, and they did it in the old Tower Automotive building, which had been vacant for decades, and brought in, of course, a well-paid workforce, welders, electricians, metal fabricators, and so forth, and they turned out high-speed trains, which was supposed to be in the service, which unfortunately went kiboshed.
Right. So it is a product not made now in Wisconsin after some political back and forth. Rusty, thanks for that. We'll go to Jim now in Kendall. Jim, hi.
How are we doing today?
Good. What do you got for us, Jim?
Little company called String Swing over in Wilton, and they make guitar holders and stuff like that. They're all used all over the world, especially in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They hold up great artist guitars like Elvis Presley, and other Jimi Hendrix guitars are being held up by String Swing. They're just an awesome product.
So this would be a rack that I would display a guitar on a wall?
Yep.
And so do people, and is this just for display like in a museum, or do rockers use them maybe in their practice space too?
They use them all over. They use them for their own personal use, and they're great for every use out there.
Well, Jim, thanks a lot. So String Swing guitar holders, guitar racks made in Wilton, he said. Thanks, Jim.
Jim, thanks for that. And we're going to go next to Mark in Sparta. Hi, Mark.
How you doing?
Good. What do you have?
Well, in Sparta, some of the best acoustic guitars in the world are manufacturers, premier guitars used by a lot of country musicians and rock musicians. And we also have Matthew's bows are manufactured in Sparta.
Okay, thanks, Mark. A lot going on in Sparta. We went from guitar racks to some of the best, he says, acoustic guitars that are made.
A lot of music making going on in Wisconsin. I mean, I knew about some. I think there's a big accordion outfit in the Milwaukee area, too. Or maybe they just sell them there. I don't know if they're made there. I'll have to check into that. Thanks for all the musical suggestions. A lot of food suggestions, too. Katie is next in Whitewater. Katie, hi.
I was going to say Culver's from my hometown, Sauk City, Wisconsin. Frozen custard and lemon ice. Can't go wrong with that.
Does it taste better at the original one in Sauk City, Katie?
You know it does.
I've eaten there. I've eaten Culver's in many different locations. But they save the best stuff for the locals, huh?
Yep, definitely.
I will say Culver's has revolutionized my family's road trip experience in terms of different options on the road. It's interesting.
I just ate at a Culver's on a road trip back from Michigan on Saturday. Time for one more call? Yeah, Chris in Platteville. Chris, hi. Chris, are you there?
Yep.
Oh, what's your product, Chris?
Hey, I am really fascinated by the amount of ginseng that Wisconsin puts out throughout the nation. They produce up to 90% of the country's ginseng, and you know that's popular in energy drinks, tea, and all sorts of products that we encounter every day. So,
Chris, thanks a lot for that call. Thank you all so much for your suggestions. You can keep your coolest Wisconsin products coming over at the Central Time Facebook page. There's so much to choose from. I don't know where I'd start. I wish I was a guitarist now so I could try all those products. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.